This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. We have a book today that's seasonal and topical for this time of year, titled List for Santa, List for Life. Provocative title. Our author, T.E. Corner, joins me from Pennsylvania in the United States. Welcome to the program, and I'll refer to you by your first name, Tom. How is your day going so far?
Fantastic, Jay. Thank you very much.
This is a colorful book, and obviously one that I would enjoy reading because it's a relatively short book, just about 32 pages. Share the background story. Why did List for Santa, List for Life become a story for you to share?
Well, Jay, thank you for the question and the opportunity. I would say this book has been years in the making as I have continued to try to become a better individual, professional, husband, son, father. And I've been doing consistent reading and studying on self-improvement, on business development and leadership. And this idea dawned on me when I was actually, I traveled quite a bit, and I was doing some work in a coffee shop, and it was getting close to the holidays, and I thought about my daughters writing their Christmas list for Santa Claus, and I realized that my own personal experience, I've been able to achieve a lot of my goals and desires by maintaining a written list of goals, or maybe call it a journal. And most kids every year during the holidays write a Christmas list, and once the holidays are done, the list is finished with.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would be a great idea to maybe teach kids the tremendous power behind writing down their goals and desires and maintaining that and not doing it just once a year, but on a continual basis. And I would say I'm perfect proof that it works.
Your book also is poetic in style. I was just reading or glancing at the opening lines, and just to give people an idea of how the book is laid out and the style, it begins by saying, "It's Christmas morning. Dad and little Kylie are still asleep. Mom is sitting in the kitchen, enjoying a hot cup of coffee, not making a peep. The sun is starting to shine bright on this beautiful Christmas day, just before little Kylie wakes up to see all the wonderful presents Santa brought her way." Have you always been poetic in your style?
This is new for me, and so I would say I have a creative spark, but I have not been poetic in my style historically.
So in your relationships, you have not been a poetry giver?
I wouldn't say poetry giver. I grew up with a family of teachers and coaches, and one of my idols is my father, who was a legendary coach in the local school system here in Pennsylvania, and he used to use a lot of quotes and ways to motivate his players, and I realized over the years that somehow I picked up that trait. So it wasn't necessarily poetic, but it was providing some sort of motivation or guidance for people.
You've included the concept or the idea of List for Life. How does that work its way into your story?
Well, the story, again, is about a little girl named Kylie, and I wrote the book to convey a very powerful message, and I wanted it to be very short and concise and to the point, which it is. As you mentioned, it's just 32 pages. And the power behind List for Life talks about Kylie leading up to Christmas and Kylie writing her list of things she desired for her mother, for her father, even for her teacher. And it shows how she wants not just things for herself, but other people in her life and close to her. And then come Christmas Day, the things she desired for her mother, for her father and teacher did come true, which is very, very powerful. And so that little story of Kylie around the Christmas time, the holidays, ends up at the end talking about Kylie growing up, being a mother herself with her own daughter, and that she took writing her list for Santa to create her own list for life, or her own journaling, and again, as I mentioned before, to writing down her dreams and desires to create something simple at a young age into a lifelong habit that really comes into play. If you're a business owner, you're writing business plans, that's another way for writing down your goals. So it's kind of Kylie during the holidays, getting excited about the holidays and what she wants for herself and others, and then the end talks about her being a mother herself, teaching her daughter the same strong habit.
Although your book looks like a book that's focused and perhaps directed towards children, I can see an adult theme that comes through as well.
Absolutely, Jay, that's a great point, because this book is for me. Growing up, I adapted really good habits, but sometimes you can't adapt all of them. And later in life, I realized the power of writing down my goals and dreams and desires. And the more I did it, and the more I did it on a regular basis, it really resulted in a more fulfilling life for me. And absolutely, although it is a children's book, it's a message that speaks to anybody of any age or any background.
Would you say that this approach is different from other children's stories in the marketplace currently?
I would like to say yes, that it does take a different approach. I do read children's stories to my children all the time, and there's all different approaches, and I've always wanted to be able to provide something that could last a lifetime for my children and other people. So I think the approach is, it's a great story. It talks about a really fun time of year for many children, but it does have that powerful message that you may not see in many other books.
There must be also an underlying message that comes through in addition to that. What would you say it might be as far as an overall picture of this particular story?
I would say the message is truly, really to, there's a quote that I actually created on my webpage that says, "Don't settle for the ordinary. Get what you desire by writing down your goals and dreams to achieve the extraordinary." So I would say the message is believe in yourself, and by believing in yourself and sticking to it and revisiting it by writing it down in a journal or a list, the more likely that your dreams and desires again will come true, leading to a more fulfilling, prosperous, abundant life. So again, the message is, I think, believe in yourself and revisit that and keep coming back to what you believe in. And you tweak it as time goes by. Life's not perfect, and you realize things change. And by tweaking it and revisiting it, your beliefs and the power of yourself, that you believe in yourself, will be very, very strong, and again, will lead to, I think, a fulfilling life.
Since this is an extension of some habits you have developed over the years, can you share anything that has happened in your personal life using these techniques that actually would be an underscore of how important it is to write lists and to plan ahead?
That is a great question. I was actually at a birthday party for my sister-in-law this week, and some of their friends were asking me about the book, and they asked me how I did it. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, quite frankly, this was something on my list. I wrote down on my list that I revisit on a regular basis that I wanted to write a book, and then I got more specific when I came up with the idea and the idea hit me. I had the title, so I had it written down, and I revisit this at least monthly, if not weekly. So that's a perfect example. This book came about because I did exactly that. I wrote it down on a list or in my journal. And it seemed like a very overwhelming task. I didn't know where to start, but by sticking to it and believing in it, it happened.
Have you had any career challenges that may have been corrected or improved upon through the use of this technique?
Absolutely. I do business planning every year for my career, and by embracing that, and I call that another method of creating a list or a journal, but by writing that down, and most professionals do a business plan and they don't revisit it maybe once a year, but by writing it down and going back to it and revisiting it and then adjusting it as necessary is, again, my view of creating a list. And it's been very, very powerful. It actually helped me to advance in my career by writing down exactly what I wanted to make, the type of job that I wanted. It helped me to advance myself in my career and also the money that I'm earning, which is amazing, so I can support my beautiful family.
I understand in 2012 that the career that you had been pursuing came to a dead end, and you had to look elsewhere. This was part of your success method.
Yes, it absolutely was. The company I was working for went out of business, so a lot of my colleagues, hundreds of colleagues, were laid off, which was very, very difficult for myself and for many others. And I did write down exactly what I wanted, and that's in my previous comment. That's what I was referring to.
Phenomenal.
Is I was laid off, and I needed to find out how I could continue my career, support my family. I wrote down all the people that I knew that were contacts in my industry, my friends, my family, and I wrote down how I wanted to approach it, who I needed to call, and by doing that, long story short, I was very fortunate that I was laid off only for a few months and landed a job, which, again, advanced my career and actually gave me a pay raise, which was very surprising.
Incredible. The story is List for Santa, List for Life. How would you introduce this to somebody, a mom or dad or grandparent or just a child that's listening, and get them interested in getting their own personal copy because of not only the immediate story but the long-range impact it could have on their life?
Well, yes, that's a great, that's my elevator pitch, I guess you could say, which is
right.
Very important. And Halloween's right around the corner, and that's the kickoff of the holiday season. And so I can see my children getting very excited, and I would say the holidays are upon us. And I'm sure many children are excited about Christmas time and getting wonderful gifts for themselves and their family. So why not start off and start creating your list today, but also other things that you want maybe throughout the year other than Christmas, maybe your birthday, or maybe other days, maybe Easter, there's things that you want. Why not start a list today? Not just for a list for Santa, a list for Christmas, but a list that will last for your lifetime, and the things that you want and desire not always come true, but the majority of the time they come true, or things change, it may come true, but in a different fashion. So I would say to get excited about the holidays, and again, don't settle for the ordinary. You always want something extraordinary, and this time of year is fun and exciting for people of all ages. Why not start your list for Santa today, but also learn a powerful habit and create your own list for life, and buy my new book, List for Santa, List for Life, available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and especially Lulu.com.
Fabulous. And this is a character-building type of read as well. 32 pages, great graphics inside and poetically done. The author, T.E. Corner, has been my guest from Pennsylvania. Tom, this is a wonderful gift for the holiday season, but one that could impact lives beyond Christmas. So thank you for sharing that. Is there another story in the future? Do you have a sequel that you might be sharing with us in the near future?
I'm so happy you asked, Jay. Yes, I finished my follow-up book to List for Santa, List for Life, and I'll start publishing that soon. My daughter even asked me about my next book, and although it was finished, she gave me a suggestion of what the theme would be, and it was the exact theme that I have for my second book. So it was I was very proud, and my daughter was proud of me. But yes, I do have the follow-up that should be on shelves in the next year, or maybe a little bit over a year. Yes.
Fabulous. Well, Tom, thank you for joining me today, sharing your story. This is a great book for the season and a great idea. We should have goals, and this will help us focus on the things that should be important to us and are important to our future. Thank you, Tom, for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Jay. I enjoyed it.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is Jay Douglas Parker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear the latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press. This is Jay Douglas Barker. Our book today is called, or titled, Medical Uses of Marijuana. Joining me from the west coast of Canada, in British Columbia, is author Joseph W. Jacob. Welcome, Joe, to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Joe, this is an interesting topic on many levels. There are a lot of bits of information that are floating about in the public domain about marijuana, some of them not too positive. You have chosen to address the medical side of marijuana, which absolutely makes sense to a lot of people. Share why you have an interest in this and what your background is, how this study came to be put into print.
Well, actually, it all began in grade 4, religion class. My parents sent me to a private Catholic school, and I knew they had to work extra hard to make additional money to send me there, and they also told me to learn truths about things, so I tried to, and in grade 3 of religion class, we studied the 7 days of creation, and on the second day, God created all the plants, and he said they were good. Then in grade 4, a new religion teacher said that there suddenly was a very bad plant that we should all completely stay away from. And it was this here strange name. I think she called it the marijuana plant. And I raised my hand and said, last year we learned about the 7 days of creation. And on the second day, God created all the plants and he said they were good. Now you say there was a bad plant. Why weren't we told about it last year when you were studying about it? And God said he made all the plants on earth and they were good. Well, who's telling me the truth, God or you? Well, the bell rang and the class ended and the subject was never brought up again. But I said to myself, in the years ahead, I'm going to study more about this and find out what the real truths are and then write a book about it.
And you began studying. You have an education background. Share a little of your other involvements, other histories, other things that you're involved with as far as education?
Well, I've actually written two other books that are currently being sold internationally. One is called The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Democracy for the People, and for each person. And it's currently in the top 100 best-selling list of the Amazon group, all three of them. And I also have written another book called Organizing Successful Democracies. And that for a time is in the top 100, but it's still being sold regularly by the Amazon group and Barnes & Noble. And I just try to keep in touch with all the important book people, the book publishers, and the various recommenders of book-related items, and just try to stay, as part of a team that is trying to make progress medically. Like, for example, the seed of the marijuana plant is the single most nutritional food source for human consumption in the world.
Hmm.
And these nutritious marijuana seeds may well counteract the Ebola virus that is currently affecting areas of the world where healthy people used to regularly eat marijuana seeds for thousands of consecutive years before the 1950s. Just a matter of getting the seeds, mashing them up, and eating them. And I'm sure it would go a long way, because it is the single most nutritional food source for human consumption in the world. And that's just not presently. That goes back thousands of years. At about 7000 B.C., there was a famous book written called the Zen Avesta, and in it, a doctor was given 10,000 different medicinal plants to comparatively evaluate. And he had his conclusion, his results, were that the marijuana plant was the number one top of the list choice out of 10,000 different plants. So that indicates something way back when. And also the doctors in California have confirmed that the marijuana seed is still the single most nutritional food source for human consumption in the world. And this is a nutritional problem, this Ebola virus, so give it a try. I'm sure it would likely work. You know, there's more than 150 different medical benefits from using marijuana plant products, not one nutritional medical harm. And yet with alcohol, it's exactly the opposite. More than 150 medical harms to the human body, not one nutritional medical benefit. So, you know, this is supposed to be a democracy for the people. It's not very much for the people when the laws allow the harmful product and only permit the healthy product. And that's what got me confused right from the beginning. And in all the research I did, I found the same thing. Like, even the Ledain Commission back in the early 70s, they could write on anything related to marijuana, but they were restricted from anything related to medical uses of marijuana.
Hmm.
So that's another reason why I thought, there's something strange here. Why can't they let the people in a democracy that's supposed to be for the people, why can't they let them know what the truth is? Or the truths are, because there's many of them. I was quite surprised to find 150 different medical ailments that can be helped by using marijuana plant products. And then I studied alcohol, and it's exactly the opposite. More than 150 medical harms and not one nutritional medical benefit.
There was some general acceptance of marijuana up until, what, the 1920s or so?
That's correct. Yeah, what happened was Mackenzie King, Canada's prime minister at the time, the United States just declared prohibition of alcohol. And Canada found it lucrative to smuggle alcohol into the U.S. Mackenzie King added an extra $9 a gallon tax on alcohol, knowing full well that the Americans couldn't refund any part of it, and they would have to pay for it, and they did. And he supported bootlegging, basically, for 10 straight years that totally undermined the U.S. idea of people not wanting to drink alcohol, and because it was harmful. But Mackenzie King stuck with it, and he made a lot of money. And that was a greedy thing, because the alcohol industry was easy to control because there weren't that many suppliers. But in the marijuana industry, it was at the time the largest agricultural industry in Canada. They called it the cannabis hemp industry, but what Mackenzie King secretively did is he changed the name to marijuana, didn't let people know what it really was, imposed harsh penalties for anybody who didn't conform, and then everybody about 3 or 4 years later found out that it was a marijuana, this marijuana plant was actually the cannabis plant, but by making it illegal, he threw millions of people out of work, started the World Depression because everybody didn't have any income to support themselves like they had before, and it was a great tragedy. And then the United States eventually followed suit. 10 years later, they did the same thing, only they put an H in this new word instead of a J. We had marijuana with a J in the middle. They had it with an H, but they imposed the same harsh penalties on people for nonconforming. But it wasn't because of health reasons or anything to do with true moral reasons either. That there was a third fellow, Hearst, who got into the picture, and he had access to trees from the forest around, and they were competing with the marijuana industry because marijuana makes good paper, the plants, and good roaches, you know. But in any rate, the situation turned out where the Hearst and his group, along with Harry Anslinger and Andrew Mellon, they secretively in the United States took over the paper industry and used wood products, which is not as environmentally friendly. And we still have that today. The forest being depleted, the oxygen levels going down, and populations increasing. It's not a very good combination.
No. Now, you you mentioned there are some medical benefits from consuming marijuana plant products. Can you name a couple of those, maybe three or four?
Oh, sure. There's high blood pressure, for example. There's glaucoma, people that have difficulty seeing properly. There's it improves digestion. It improves the ability to have healthy diets. Another good example of all funny things is it actually helps with the cure for rabies, of all things.
Really?
And no current medical products do that. That's why when I heard that, I thought that's very similar to this Ebola situation. It's a strange thing that nobody seems to be able to handle, but the marijuana plant product can do it, and it does it. There's several other things relating to nervous disorders, people that have problems speaking, lispers, it helps them speak better.
And you're actually referring to not just the smoking side of marijuana. You're actually talking about the plant itself and consuming it as a medical product, as a medical pill or diet supplement.
Well, partially, yes. But there's an interesting thing to note about smoking marijuana. Throughout the entire history of the recorded world, there has never been one case of a person getting lung cancer from smoking marijuana. And also, there's never been one death that has occurred from people smoking marijuana either. So those two facts lean strongly in the direction that no matter how it's used, as long as it's used in its natural form, it can be beneficial to a person. Like it relaxes a person when they smoke it, and it only takes a few minutes, whereas when they eat it, it does relax a person, but it takes maybe an hour later, that sort of thing. But in either case, it relaxes the person and takes away stress and pain. That's the big thing. It reduces pain of all sorts, even with arthritis and rheumatism and asthma. It does a great job of making it better than it was before. So it's the whole nature of the plant, the smoking of it, the eating of it, and people made teas with it as well, and candies. Hmm. There was a candy made in the United States by the Sears Roebuck Company for 40 years, sold in the catalogs, that was made with marijuana plant products and maple syrup. and apparently it was the most popular candy around, and it was totally harmless. But that's sort of the nature of the plant.
That's the history of it. You began writing this. You have 224 pages. Who did you want to reach with your research?
Basically, I wanted to reach anybody who was over the level of grade 10 with an educational background, so that if they were interested in learning truths about this subject, they would have a reliable source to go to. The only restriction I had was English speaking. There were publishing companies that wanted me to do it in different languages, and I said, no, I said English is the language of choice for me, because, first of all, they use English as the language of the air, and it's also the international language of business. So I don't get confused when I use English, and that's basically the audience I wanted. It was an English-speaking audience with more than a grade 10 education that was interested in this subject, that wanted to read it and not get confused, because everything in here is sourced, and there's 800 different footnotes, and each footnote is a source. So I think it covered it as best as I could in a chronological sequence from the beginning of recorded history about 10,000 years ago up to the present.
Present time. The title of your book, Medical Uses of Marijuana, that should get people's attention. Where can they get copies of your book, Joe?
Well, we can get it through Trafford Publishing or from Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, Amazon.co.uk, and BarnesandNoble.com. Now, those are the popular big companies.
Sure.
Well, Trafford's not that. Yeah, but those are the ones immediately related to it. But in some of my research on the computer not too long ago, I found out there's more than 100 different booksellers that are selling this particular book, and everybody seems to like it.
Is there a sequel in the works also, Joe?
No, but that's why I wrote the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms book, because it goes into more depth about why it should be legal as compared to the way it currently is. And I'm able to write more, but I don't want to until I find out how popular these three books are and getting the royalties as well, because it's taken a while for royalties to happen. But I'm patiently progressing and trying to help advertise the book like we're doing right now.
Very good.
To make it so that it's easier for the publishers to collect royalties and then pay them to me.
The title of the book, again, is Medical Uses of Marijuana. Our guest has been author and researcher Joseph Jacob. Joe, thank you for joining me today.
Well, it was a pleasure, Jay, and I look forward to more exciting things in the future.
Fabulous. Good talking with you for Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press. This is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is Tough Conversations with the Heart of Jesus. Author Richard Tiller joins me from Virginia. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for asking me on.
Richard, you have a diverse background, not only as a writer, but also as a motivational guy and also a coach. Tell me, what was the inspiration behind putting this book into print?
Well, for the last 42 years, I've been in the home building business. I started out as a salesperson, then became a manager, and then for the last 23 years, I've been self-employed as a coach and consultant and trainer to salespeople and managers. So one of the things those years taught me was how valuable and pivotal tough conversations can be and how important it is to do them well. And when I say pivotal, I mean in the sense of how much good they can accomplish when they're done well and how much opportunity can be lost if they're done poorly. So this is a real game changer that we're talking about here. I've been writing books on sales and management and leadership and fulfillment for over 20 years, and I feel that tough conversations is such an important topic that I needed to write a book that focused specifically on that.
You have...
But I've also learned... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll edit that out.
Oh, okay. But I've also learned that the principles we use for mastering tough conversations apply to handling many of life's other challenges as well. And then I decided that the most powerful way I could approach this topic was from a biblical perspective. So I wrote Tough Conversations with the Heart of Jesus. It's about how to be comfortable and confident in tough conversations. It's a biblical perspective on how to engage in tough conversations in a way that will produce the best result for everyone involved. It's based on the idea that even though tough conversations are not something we tend to look forward to, we can still embrace them as opportunities to achieve a resolution, sometimes a breakthrough, occasionally even a transformation that could not have been achieved any other way.
Yeah, your book is not just a biblical study. You actually take common everyday occurrences in individuals' lives and recount those stories and then adapt them to your concept.
Yes, it was very important to me that to make this book effective, I needed to balance it about 50% information and 50% examples. So there's a lot of illustration in it, along with a lot of biblical content.
Your first chapter, talking about opportunities, leads this way. He was doomed. Andy was trouble from the first day. His parents had sent him away to boarding school when he was in 10th grade. I never learned much of his story, but I knew his life at home was hard. I was a senior when I first met him. And so the story goes. What is the story of Andy?
Well, Andy was having a very tough time in school in sort of every category. He was doing very, very poorly with his grades. We had a demerit system there. This was a boarding school, and so he had a lot of demerits. He had a very poor disciplinary record. He was very unpopular. And a lot of this was just, he was very unhappy, you know, with himself and with life. And so he was in a real tailspin, and basically, it was winding up that he wanted to get himself kicked out of school.
Did he survive and thrive?
Well, eventually he did. What happened was one day he summoned me through a third party to his room to talk. You know, and so I went down and I wanted to, you know, check out what was up, and while I was sitting down, he lit up a cigarette, and which was the first step to getting expelled. Basically, if you got caught smoking twice, you were expelled. So the first time was a suspension, and the second time was an expulsion. And, you know, we just talked through that. I told him to... you know, basically forget about the cigarette. Let's talk about what's going on here. And then the book tells that story of the conversation that we had. And my goal in the conversation was just to let him know that I believed in him, which was true, and that, you know, I took him seriously, which I think one of his problems was he just didn't believe people took him seriously. And just kind of let him talk through it, and I saw potential in this boy. I mean, I thought he could be a really good guy. He seemed intelligent. I thought he could really be a role model and an inspiration. I thought he had what it took. He just didn't believe in himself. So I talked through that with him, and apparently he had just never had a conversation like that before. And we were addressing the fact that he was in trouble. I mean, we were addressing the fact that he was in trouble and about to get himself into much bigger trouble, but in the context of speaking the truth in love, as the Bible would say. And it really was what he needed all along, and he turned everything around. We were on a tri-semester system, and in the third semester, he went from being the worst grades in his class to being top in his class.
Phenomenal.
His disciplinary record was immaculate, and yes, it was in fact a transformational conversation, and it was for me too. I mean, that the impact that that conversation had on me really helped me focus on how important it was to have these conversations when they were needed, and that wound up being helpful in my career later in sales and in management and in coaching.
You also have recounted a tough conversation Jesus Christ had with a rich young man in the New Testament, where a rich man came to the Lord, or to Jesus, and asked what he must do to inherit eternal life. And Jesus responded with a very tough answer. Now, the tough answer may not have been exactly what the young man was looking for, or even in its merit, something that would be universal. But how would you describe that conversation?
Well, it was a tough conversation in that, you know, in a purely worldly sense. Here was Jesus leading a ministry, and a young man came to him who was very impressionable. He really wanted to know what Jesus had to say, and he had a lot of money. So from a worldly standpoint, it was a situation of, this guy can do me a lot of good if I play my cards right in this conversation. Well, that was just not the approach that Jesus took. Jesus purely focused on the well-being of the other person. He always put the needs and the well-being and the dignity of the other person above his own, trusting that his own needs and well-being and dignity would be taken care of in the process. And so he was focused purely on what was best for the rich young man, which was to be told that if he wanted to become the person he was striving to be, he would have to let go of his money. And that was very disheartening to the young man, because he loved his money.
That's where his heart was. Yes.
That was his stumbling block.
That was his passion. It's not that the scriptures or New Testament says get poor and give away everything necessarily. It's that this particular individual had a passion that was wrapped up in his status in life as a rich man.
Exactly. It's like the verse in the Bible that often is quoted as money is the root of all evil. The verse is actually the love of money is the root of all evil. That was the issue that that Jesus was addressing. But one of my favorite lines in that story is, as Jesus was preparing to give his response, it says, Jesus looked at him and loved him, and he was speaking the truth in love. And we're not told how that story ends. We're told, you know, the end of the story is the man's face fell. He went away because he went away sad because he had great wealth. So the point of the story is not what happened to the man, but the importance of the encounter itself, the opportunity, and the fact that that opportunity exists for each of us, the opportunity to put God and other people ahead of ourselves.
Would you call your book a book that should be read by people who have a religious bend, or is this something that really has universal truths that could appeal to everybody?
Yes, I believe that it's a, like, my target market, so to speak, for this book is everyone. It's my target audience is anyone who experiences anxiety over tough conversations. Anyone who wants to engage in tough conversations more confidently and effectively and productively. And so I want the book to be useful for everyone because tough conversations are a challenge that everyone faces. So while my book emphasizes a biblical perspective, specifically the teachings of Jesus, the heart of Jesus, his teachings and his heart aren't just for Christians. They're for everyone. So I want the book to be.
How would you suggest or recommend to my listeners, if they have a tough conversation on the horizon, how do they begin that initial step? What is the step they should take?
Well, the basic idea, in other words, it starts with attitude and with the right heart. So I want to get the right heart in place first. That would be the first step, and then that makes the right techniques come more easily. So first of all, I want to look at the tough conversation as an opportunity to be embraced, not a hazard to be feared. See, the biggest challenge most of us face in tough conversations is fear. And this fear has two possible consequences. Either we avoid a conversation that needs to take place, and then the problem gets worse, or we engage in the conversation in a state of fear, and then the problem also gets worse. So it's absolutely essential to overcome our fear of tough conversations. And when we do overcome it, it's a total game changer. The game changer is the ability to approach the tough conversation with the belief that we will be better off after it's over than we were before it began. So that's really step one, because the heart of Jesus is wanting us to replace fear with courage and anxiety with calmness and weakness with strength and insecurity with confidence. Then the next step is realizing that the key to achieving the best results in tough conversations, and I mentioned this actually a moment ago with Jesus and the rich young man, it's to focus on the needs and the well-being and dignity of the other person. Let my own needs and well-being and dignity take care of itself and trust that it will. And the principle behind that, it's an interesting one, because we need to play to our own strengths and not our weaknesses. Well, the fact is, we are all, every one of us, we're all at our best and strongest when we focus primarily on the well-being of others. And we're all at our worst and weakest when we focus on our own well-being. It's just a fascinating fact about the way human beings are wired. So we eliminate our fear in tough conversations when we switch our focus from looking out for ourselves to looking out for the other person. And if we can take this fear of what will happen to us out of the encounter, focus on what's happening to the other person instead, it takes the primary source of our fear out of play. If we can focus on what the other person is experiencing, for example, instead of what we're experiencing, then that transforms our feelings of weakness into feelings of strength. So that's the first thing to do to prepare mentally and spiritually for a tough conversation.
It's the foundation. Richard, share in a couple of sentences or maybe even a paragraph for my listeners how they should approach this book. Why should they be interested in getting a copy of Tough Conversations with the Heart of Jesus?
The book aims directly at the specific target of tough conversations in terms of the way Jesus provides the solution of it. So I think the value of the book, it's two things. It's the way the book brings the heart of Jesus into play through Scripture, in the stories about Jesus, and also things that the people who followed him learned from him that they applied to their own lives. And then also the fact that I use a lot of illustrations. So it's a book that describes, number one, how it works, what the mindset is, what the heart is, kind of like I was talking a moment ago. But then it also gives a lot of different examples to show what it actually looks like in practice.
You've written other books. This one is specifically targeted towards those tough conversations that many of us have to have with friends, loved ones, and coworkers. And it's entitled Tough Conversations with the Heart of Jesus, our author, Richard Tiller. Richard, please share with my listeners where they can get a copy of your book.
Well, my own website is www.toughconversation.com. They can also get the book on Amazon or from various online retailers or bookstores.
Thank you, Richard, for sharing the background story on this. You will have other books, I'm sure, in the future. Anything in the works currently?
Yes, I have a couple of things. One that's actually already written is How the Bible Provides Encouragement. It's not on the publishing path yet because this is still a new book. But The Bible as God's Gift of Encouragement is a book I've written. And then possibly reworking some of the books I've done in the past. One's called Motivation from the Heart. A couple of others there. But yes, the short answer is I'm working on a few new things. Probably the Biblical Encouragement book will be the next one.
Excellent. This book is encouraging and motivational and tackles a tough topic. Tough Conversations with the Heart of Jesus, our author Richard Tiller. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.